Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. Before we start our show today, a message from our sponsors. When 6-year-old Hannah's brutal honesty is mistaken for lying, she stops speaking entirely. Her family, her community, and eventually the entire nation are ripped apart by her silence. One word could put an end to the chaos if Hannah could only find her voice. Hannah's Voice by Rob Grindstaff is available at Amazon and many other fine bookstores. Liberty lovers will appreciate Hannah's struggle against authority and her desire to be left alone. So get your copy today. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. I'm your host, Austin Peterson, here with my guest, Laura Myers. Laura, welcome back to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning. Today is sort of a somber day, a sad day. We're going to be talking about a tragedy which occurred this past week. There was a shooting in Charleston, South Carolina, and it's an issue which we want to take with all appropriate seriousness and something that we want to analyze and discuss. I think libertarians need to step up and to discuss the root causes of some of these issues. And certainly this is one where I think that libertarian issues need to be brought to the forefront on, because too often what occurs is that we get a left-right perspective on this and nobody provides a balanced middle-of-the-road perspective that's reasonable when it comes to what sort of response we should have to a tragedy. Because what happens a lot of times, I find, when something like this occurs, this Dylann Roof character, is that everybody ascribes their own narrative, their preordained narrative on top of it. You know, oh, it's guns. Oh, it's drugs. Oh, it's racism. Oh, you know, and what are the root causes of these crimes? And I have my own theory on what causes crimes like this. I don't think it's a satisfying theory, but that's because I think, unfortunately, there are just some mysteries and truths and things like that that are ultimately unsatisfying, because we as human beings, we sort of want to have crisp, clear answers right off the bat. You know what I mean? We want to have problem-solving solutions. And sometimes, unfortunately, there just is no easy solution to problems such as the one that we have. I'm going to be reading today from the New York Post, and we're going to be breaking down and analyzing the story as we go through. This is by Leonard Green. Charleston massacre suspect wanted to start a civil war. He was pure evil, lying in wait. The South Carolina man who blew away 9 people in a historically black church was a drug-abusing loner who told racist jokes, admired the Confederate flag, and was planning his sick rampage for months, friends and relatives said. He said he wanted to start a civil war, roommate Dalton Tyler told ABC News. He said he was going to do something like that and then kill himself. Friends and former classmates described Dylann Storm Roof, 21, as quiet and reserved, but never shy about sharing the twisted racist views authorities believe fueled the massacre that unfolded Wednesday night at Charleston's Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church. He was big into segregation and other stuff, said Tyler, who lived with Roof in a trailer park in Lexington, South Carolina for about a year. Yet early on, few recognized or did anything about the warning signs that might have signaled the bloodbath to come. Roof was described as a smart, quiet child who grew up in a stable middle-class family. He was the son of a contractor and middle child between one full sister and one half-sister, according to the Wall Street Journal. His grandfather is C. Joseph Roof, a prominent Columbia, South Carolina lawyer, the paper reported. He didn't grow up looking like a troubled kid or a violent kid, said a South Carolina woman whose daughter was married to Roof's dad and still sees her stepson. His parents divorced many years ago, and his father, who gave his son a .45 caliber handgun for his 21st birthday, and stepmother have also split up, said the former relative, who asked to remain anonymous. Then, something changed. Friends from White Knoll High School in Lexington said Roof did drugs, like Xanax, and they said they just shrugged it off when Roof told offensive jokes. He made a lot of racist jokes, but you don't take them really seriously like that. You don't really think of it like that, a former classmate told the Daily Beast. He had that kind of Southern pride, Mullins said. Roof, who attended 6 different schools between 4th and 9th grades, displayed a Confederate flag on the front license plate area of his car. The Stars and Bars is not unusual in South Carolina, which flies the Confederate flag over a memorial near its statehouse. The Southern Poverty Law Center, an Alabama-based civil rights group that tracks hate organizations and extremists, said that Roof was not on its radar, yeah, because he was just an average racist, you know. Roof's Facebook page, which features a list of black, quote, friends, also showed him scowling in a jacket bearing flags from apartheid South Africa and from what was once white-ruled Rhodesia and is now Zimbabwe. The two flags, as a Confederate flag is in many circles, are considered symbols of hate. Roof repeated ninth grade and left school in 10th grade in February 2010, a spokeswoman for the Lexington County School District said. He turned into a loner in the last couple of years, and no one knew why, she said. He just fell off the grid somehow. Roof's uncle, Carson Cowles, noticed a change, and told his sister, Amelia, Roof's mother, that the quiet, soft-spoken boy was too introverted. I said he was like 19 years old. He still didn't have a job, a driver's license, or anything like that. He just stayed in his room a lot of the time, Cowles told Reuters. Lately, his behavior grew increasingly erratic. Records show he was arrested February 28th at the Columbiana Mall when police responded to a call that he was harassing store workers, asking them bizarre questions about store hours and staffing. The arresting officers found him on Suboxone, a powerful medication used to treat addiction to heroin and painkillers. It has been connected with outbursts of aggression. Police also found him with cocaine, LSD, and methamphetamine. It's a lot of drugs.
Did he have a job?
A lot. I have no idea. I don't think so. The mall banned Roof for a year after the incident, but he was arrested there again just 2 months later on a trespassing charge. Chris Spears, manager of the shoe department store, said Roof, dressed all in black, approached his assistant while she was working. So he had been through the criminal justice system,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it's not like the state didn't have an opportunity here to try and put a profile down on
this kid.
Yeah, he was on the radar, right. The shoe department store said Roof approached his assistant while she was working. He was asking her all kinds of personal questions, wanting to know work schedules. She was busy working, and she felt uncomfortable, so she called security, and they came and got him, Spears said. He said Roof was, quote, wanting to basically see how we ran things, and, quote, acted like he was on drugs. Really creepy. Roof explained it away, telling cops that he was there because his parents were pressuring him to get a job, records show. And in recent weeks, Roof reconnected with a childhood buddy, Joseph Meek Jr., who he hadn't seen in 5 years, and started railing about the Trayvon Martin case, about black people, quote, taking over the world, and about the need for, quote, the white race to do something about it, Meek said. Roof never talked about race years ago when they were friends, Meek said, and only recently made remarks about the killing of the unarmed black 17-year-old Martin in Florida and the riots in Baltimore over the police custody death of Freddie Gray. He said blacks were taking over the world, Meek said. Someone needed to do something about it for the white race. He said he wanted segregation between whites and blacks. I said, that's not the way it should be, but he kept talking about it. Meek said that when he woke up Wednesday morning, Roof was at his house, sleeping in his car outside. Ooh. Later that day, Meek went to a nearby lake with a couple other people, but Roof hated the outdoors and decided he would rather go see a movie. It wasn't until a surveillance camera image of a young man with a soup bowl haircut was broadcast on television Thursday morning that he saw his friend again. I didn't think it was him, Meek said. I knew it was him. And I'll just finish this up. I'm reading this other quote from Variety Magazine. This is the response from our dear president. He said, "We don't have all the facts." Thank you for acknowledging that. But I'll go ahead
and draw a conclusion,
yeah. Mr. Mm-hmm. President. Says, but we do know that, once again, innocent people were killed in part because someone who wanted to inflict harm had no trouble getting their hands on a gun, Obama said, adding, at some point, we as a country have to reckon with the fact that this type of mass violence does not happen in other advanced countries. Really? So then what was that incident with Charlie Hebdo in France, mm-hmm. where the Muslim terrorists came in and shot everybody in the head?
Right.
Tell us again, Mr. President.
So, yeah, in regards
to that.
In
gun control France, you know what I mean?
You're right. So I kind of, this to me almost sounds like a mirror of all the other cases that we've seen of Muslim extremists, you know, going online and finding vulnerable young people who have maybe, you know, kind of always been the weird ones in their class, the introverts, the kind of maybe tend to be a little bit violent. And then they bring this ideology to them that makes them feel like they have a purpose or like there's a justice that they need to fight for. And so, and you know, when we talk about terrorists like that, that commit acts of violence on behalf of jihad, we don't talk about gun violence or gun control or weapons or anything like that. We talk about the ideology.
Right.
And so I think it's important that the conversation be centered around ideology, because this was an act of racism.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to, you know, shift the conversation that way. And it's sort of a mirror situation. That's how I see it anyways.
Well, here's the thing. When you talk about ideology, it's one thing, which I think ideology can drive people to do, to commit crimes. But there has to be a predilection for violence. There has to be some other motivating factors for people to actually go out and commit crimes. Because,
sure.
You know, there are a lot of racists on the internet. You know, there are a lot of people who have bad ideology on the internet. Now, not everybody who's... To me, the end result of socialism is violence and revolution. But, you know, not every socialist on the internet is calling for violence and revolution. Even those who aren't all, you know, potential criminals. They're just all talk and bluster. And so what happens is, a lot of times, like for this guy, he had his friend, he was saying that he was going to commit these crimes to his friends, and nobody believed him. So it becomes a problem of, like, how much accountability does a community have to say, you know, when someone starts threatening violence, you know, what's a credible threat? You know, you know, maybe we need to have better education for people to say, hey, these are warning signs. When someone says, hey, I'm going to kill someone, you know, maybe these need to be, it needs to be taken more seriously in a sense. But, you know, how can we create a system accountability that wouldn't morph into some sort of Orwellian, you know, thought crime kind of a thing. You know what I mean? Just because you say somebody, you know, you think somebody should be dead doesn't mean that you want to kill them, right?
Well, and there was that court case that ruled there was a crazy ex-husband that was threatening to kill his wife and made those Facebook statuses that he claimed were rap lyrics that were just gory and disgusting.
Like
and
Eminem.
Right, and he was threatening his wife, but the court deemed that it was free speech on Facebook. I mean, similar things like that. Where do you take someone seriously? Is there intent?
Very difficult, yeah. Very difficult. But, you know, when the president comes out and talks about how it's difficult, you know, people have no trouble getting their hand on a gun, criminals will never have a problem getting their hand on a gun. And he got his gun legally, right? So if he had had a problem, like, well, here's the thing. He had been arrested for trespassing before. I mean, I guess, you know, you don't lose your right to own a gun in this country unless you commit a felony, or if you're caught with drugs. And I think there are probably some other offenses as well, but he hadn't done any of that yet. So I guess the problem here again is that you can't blame the gun for the violence. You know, he could have just as easily use any other weapon to commit mass violence.
Sure.
You brought up a story, for example, like, what was it? Some mass stabbing that occurred?
Oh, right. Yeah, I've referenced this before. Just the same day as the Sandy Hook shooting, there was a man in China who went and raided an elementary school and stabbed 22 children.
22 children. Amazing. Mm-hmm. That sounds like the kind of mass stab, like, event that would occur only in the United States. So why is it that President Obama says that they don't have this kind of mass violence in other countries?
It's because it doesn't fit his
It doesn't
narrative.
Fit the preordained narrative. And of course, well, think about this. You know, the Democrats are always like, cops are racist. You know, they're killing black teens. So how come it is when a cop kills a black teen that they don't blame the gun for violence there? Right?
Right.
Think about it. They blame it on racist cops. They don't blame the gun. Well, don't you think that, well, how shouldn't you say, hey, maybe cops have too much access to guns? You know, maybe that is a problem. Well, a libertarian might say that's true. Maybe cops do have a little too much access to guns.
I think libertarians do say that.
I think libertarians do say that. Absolutely. Yeah. And it just so happens to be true. But, you know, when you're talking about, you know, the preordained narratives, that they could accuse libertarians of that. We're trying to make this fit our preordained narrative. So let's go off the rails a little bit and talk about another issue which is related to this. And this is all the drugs that he's on and that the ones that he is prescribed with. Now, yesterday, I saw that the conspiracy theorists, like the Sandy Hook weirdos, the people who always believe everything's a false flag. You know, Julie Borowski wrote an awesome piece, you know.
Not everything is a false flag. She tweeted that, all caps.
Right, right. And then, wait a minute. And then you, Laura, this morning, you were like, but if it was a false flag, I'm like, no conspiracy theorizing in this office. What was your point? What was your point?
My point was, if it was a false flag, it was a very well-positioned and well-thought-out false flag, because it deterred people from talking about Rachel Dolezal and Caitlyn Jenner and, deterred the conversation, the narrative, to white supremacy rather than gender or racial issues. Racial issues.
Well, we do need to have a fit the narrative. Right. And obviously, this wasn't a false flag. We're going to talk about drugs, but we do need to, you know, we do need to get back to the white supremacy narrative. We need to talk about the supremacy. We need to talk about the Confederacy. Because, you know, one of the things that I like to do on my Facebook page is wind up the neo-Confederates, of which there are many, and of which we have our, right here, Dylan Roof, a neo-Confederate. And this is a problem that we have in the Liberty Movement of people who think that they're defending, you know, some Southern culture that they see as more libertarian. But we're going to discuss this. We're going to have a discussion about the Civil War.
I dated one.
Okay, save that story.
He's not going to listen to this.
Okay, good. Why? Because he's out in the woods, like, banging his sister.
Oh, my God.
We're going to talk about drugs right now. I want to talk about drugs, and then I want to talk about white supremacy. I want to talk about neo-Confederates, of which a few might be listening to this show, and if you are, go yourself.
Take the license plate off.
Take the license plate off the front of your car. Stop being a dick, and you know, go make black friends. Okay, they're actually pretty awesome, and they do have good music and great food, and black girls are hot. drugs. Yeah, so drugs. The guy was on a cocktail of drugs, but not SSRIs. So the first thing that the conspiracy theorists came out and started pointing fingers at is like, oh, he was taking this something that they use to keep people off of heroin. It's like a painkiller drug. It's to get you off of, it's oxy, something like that. Hold on. Suboxone. It's a powerful medication used to treat addiction to heroin and painkillers. It's also been connected with outbursts of aggression. Police also found him with cocaine, LSD, and methamphetamine, Radar Online reported. Now, the problem with the conspiracy theorists is that the conspiracy theorists want to blame this kind of behavior on the drugs. They're connecting it to, well, all these psychopath killers and stuff, what do they all have in common? They're all on antipsychotic medication. You know, well, yeah. Yeah. Is it a surprise to you that psychos take psychomedication? But you know why that's offensive and why people get upset about that? Because there's a lot of people out there who are on these drugs. A lot of people are taking these drugs. Like, the thing about like these drugs is like we live in a world where, you know, you want to talk about this guy having no emotions or feelings outside. We don't know what the chemical state is of the brains of the people who are right next to us. Like, for all you know right now, I could be on drugs. I am on drugs. Like, this morning I took Zantac, I took Zyrtec, and I took 2 ibuprofen. And so, you know, that's my cocktail that I jammed.
And you drank coffee.
And I drank coffee, caffeine. So you don't know what the chemical state is of anybody around you. And, you know, when you're talking about something like Suboxone, which has been used to treat connected with outbursts of aggression. First of all, I highly doubt that he was being prescribed this medication. We don't know yet because that hasn't been released. Like his chemicals haven't been released yet. But we do know they found him with cocaine, LSD, and meth.
I was going to say, did he get the LSD and the cocaine prescribed too?
Well, exactly, right? So here's the problem with the conspiracy theorists on this one when they're trying to lay the blame on these antipsychotic medications. First of all, he's not taking an antipsychotic medication. Second of all, the drugs that he is taking are all the ones that libertarians are like, legalize that shit. Right. LSD, cocaine, and meth. And we know for a fact that if somebody hopped up on meth does go out on fucking rage binges. And we do know that when somebody is taking cocaine that they get all, you know, coked up and crazy. So this doesn't help libertarians' case in terms of legalizing drugs because a situation like this is just going to make more people say, these drugs are banned for a reason, a good reason.
I told you so.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it doesn't help our case here to say, hey, psychotic people on the drugs are what's linked to psychotic people. Because if you're trying, if you're a conspiracy theorist or a Sandy Hook truther or some creepo weirdo who thinks that, you know, that big pharma is in a conspiracy to get everybody drugged up and people are going crazy and killing because they're taking murder pills, which is what Alex Jones and our conspiracy theorist freak competition says frequently, always trying to link it to the drugs, you link it to LSD, link it to cocaine, link it to meth, link it to all the drugs that you like and you take, you weirdos. And it's not all totally true. To be totally objective here, there are some people who do take antipsychotic medications. And on the insert, they say, Austin, read the insert. I'll read the insert. So I went through and I read some of the inserts yesterday on some of these pills. And they say one of the side effects that's listed is you may experience depression. You may experience anxiety. You may experience even suicidal thoughts. And I said something offensive yesterday, which I don't take back. But that when you, if you're psychotic already and you're taking a drug that's supposed to help with psychosis, but it might lead to suicidal thoughts, well, isn't suicide better than homicide? Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Wouldn't it have been better if this guy just offed himself instead of killing six people?
One for nine.
Yeah. Yep. Wouldn't it have been better? Yeah. So I can't see any of the downsides to people taking antipsychotic drugs unless it's some sort of like, there are obviously drugs that have been recalled by the FDA because they've been proven effective or if they had negative side effects, Effexor, or something that like, you know, made your stomach lining bleed. You know, in which case, of course, the drugs are the problem. But the problem with the conspiracy theorists are that they see this as like a side effect of over medication of society, which they do have a point in the sense that, you know, I think that we do we probably over medicate kids, you know, giving all these young boys all these mind altering drugs to slow them down.
ADD, ADHD.
Mm-hmm. I do worry about that stuff.
How dare you want to squirm in your chair when you're at school for 8 hours a day.
Exactly. Yeah. But again, that isn't this case.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to take that narrative and to paint it on this case, you're barking up the wrong tree, guys. So, you know, I love you and I know you hate me, but the reality is that you have got to compartmentalize when discussing cases like this and not spout off like, oh, he was on drugs. Well, because he might be on the same drugs that you're on. And there goes my phone, which I'm sure I can find. Hold on. So what do you think about the drug issue while I try and find this?
No, I think you're right. I think it's the same people that you're talking about that want to argue for the case, and here I'm just reiterating, but you know, they're gonna back themselves into a corner once they start arguing that the problem is caused by over medication, and then someone will counter with, well, then why would you want it legalized? Well, shoot, now I got myself in a corner and I can't defend my point anymore.
All right, so let's move on. I want to talk about white supremacy. I want to talk about the Confederacy. I want to talk about I want to talk about Neo Confederates because, you know, I posted on my Facebook page the other day, you know, there's a lot of confusion in the liberty movement about ideology and principles. And quite frequently I will see, and this is not a straw man argument, I will see people who call themselves anarchists, who call themselves anarchist capitalists, anarcho-capitalist Confederates, right? So they supported the Southern states secession from the North. And you know what I think it comes down to for them, those people, is they hate the federal government. They hate the United States so much that anybody who is an enemy of the United States is to them superior. And that's what really happens, is that like some people hate the American government so much that, you know, Russia Today is their news outlet for the truth, right? the propaganda arm of the Kremlin is their, you know, source of truth in the world. But we do have a problem with neo-Confederates in the liberty movement. And you know, if you want to talk about repudiation, you know, you want to talk about white people, you know, answering for, you know, white people need to answer for this crime, like that stupid racist woman who was like, goodness, you know, white people need to answer. Well, first of all, what if I don't identify as white? Right? What if I don't identify as white? Why should I have to speak for all white people? You know,
what if I identify as a dog?
Right.
Is that okay?
Exactly. So, you know, jokes aside, you know, people, one of the complaints that people made, and certain, some African-Americans who are on my page said, one of the things that really pisses me off is that every time something like this happens, a crime happens for a white person versus a black person, is black people are called thugs and terrorists and, you know, all of this. But white people, they go, oh, mental, psychotic, you know what I mean? He's crazy, you know, and they were looking at this, they were trying to say that, oh, that it was superior, that white people, like, were sort of looking out for each other by saying, oh, covering that, oh, you're psychotic. quite frankly, I think I would rather be called a thug or a terrorist rather than a psychopath. Ill. But I mean, again, it's all subjective. And I mean, everybody is going to look at their own culture and their own race and say, you know, hey, we feel we're the ones that are more unfairly put upon. I guess I would rather be called a thug than a psychopath. But I mean, they say that, that white people are given free passes. It's not the case, because when you look at like the case of the guy out in California who was like the psycho, the half Asian, half white guy, the Elliot guy who started shooting off into the crowd out in California. He was called a terrorist, you know, I think that, you know, if you actually go down and you take a look at case studies in history, you know, it's not all consistent with the narrative that the media would like to try to paint it as.
Yeah. Well, just another point similar to that that frustrates me is that when you have, you know, one white person commit a mass shooting, you know, all white people are racist. That's what the narrative becomes. Is that, see, all of these white people need to answer for why this person did this. But when one, you know, Muslim extremist commits an act of terrorism, well, not all Muslims are evil, is what the narrative becomes. It's a peaceful religion, is what the narrative becomes. But when it comes to white crime, it's easily generalized because that's what people want it to be.
Right. Like, you can say, oh, Obama says these massacres never happen. Somebody just sent me right now, here's a list of massacres in Australia, starting from the 1600s all the way up to today. 1990, Surry Hills shooting. 1991, Strathfield massacre. Six people dead. Childers Palace backpackers fire. You know, 15 dead. These shootings and these kinds of murders do happen in other countries.
Home invasions have increased wildly in Australia since firearms were banned.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that brings us back to our preordained narrative about, you know, the only thing that can stop a good guy with a gun is a bad guy with a gun. And didn't we read a story this morning about a woman who managed to stop an attack in a church? Can you tell us a little bit about that,
yeah,
Laura? Pull that up for us, will you?
Yeah, so this woman was in a church, and there was a shooter that walked in with an AR-15, and he had magazines, is what the article reads.
Wow.
I'm trying to find her
name
right now.
He could have killed a lot of people.
He was shooting down hallways, shooting up the church, and everybody, you know, sought refuge in the building. And so this woman was a police officer, and she talked about how she had loved the church, and, you know, this was her home. Her name is
Jean Assam. Jeannie Assam, yeah.
Okay.
Jeannie Assam. Jeannie Assam. But she, 5 years ago, she shot a gunman at New Life Church in Colorado Springs, saved countless lives. National hero, lauded by George W. Bush.
Yeah, so she was concealed carrying in the church, and she saw what was happening, and she analyzed the situation, and she figured out what she needed to do next, and she risked her life to save the other lives there. And, I mean, the amount of ammunition that it sounded like this guy had could have killed everyone in the building, but instead, she risked her life to save others, and I don't know if anyone was killed, but she did kill him and saved lives,
well
which
done.
Is awesome.
Well done, Jeannie. So we talked about drugs. We talked a little bit about the white supremacy, but I know that probably wasn't satisfying for the people who wanted to hear more about that. But, you know, we need to repudiate, you know, neo-Confederate ideas from a libertarian standpoint, simply for the fact that there was nothing libertarian about the Confederate States of America. If you read the Articles of Secession, I've said this 100 times. If you read the Articles of Secession, they all say that they seceded expressly for the purpose of maintaining chattel slavery. So if you're waving the stars and bars and you think that John Wilkes Booth was some kind of a hero, you're an asshole. And you're not a libertarian. If you're a neo-Confederate, you're not a libertarian, because there was absolutely zero libertarian principles about the Confederacy. Nothing. And because slavery wipes out any sort of good that might come from this. It's like saying, oh, well, we're going to have a libertarian state, but we'll have slaves, right? You could have almost no taxes. You could have, you know, totally liberal social policy. You could have gay marriage. But if you have slaves, then you're not a libertarian. Sorry.
You know what new Confederates kind of remind me of is
what?
The Purge movies.
Oh, why? Have you ever
seen? Yeah. Just because they're like these angry, frustrated young men that can't channel their anger, so they want to slap a Confederate flag on the front of their jacked up pickup truck.
Right, and, like this kid. Like this kid.
Yeah.
More often than not, these are people who are antisocial, contrarians, who never were able to get along with people. So they tend to naturally sort of flock with the libertarian crowd because we are more highly individualist, right?
Sure.
And his political beliefs were described, and I don't know if that's fair or not, as conservative in this in one of these articles that I read this morning. But, you know, there are a lot of Southern conservatives who identify with white pride, who identify with Southern nationalism. Certainly when I drive here through Virginia, like I drove to Kentucky recently, and I saw a lot of Confederate flags flying from here to Kentucky. And, you know, it's one thing to say, hey, this is our culture, this is our tradition, and I'm not for, like, demolitioning memorials to Confederate leaders or anything like that. But, you know, if you're flying it on your house, you know, if you're flying it on your flag, you know, a flag up your pole, then you're probably trying to make a statement about something in order to offend. And don't tell me that this isn't meant to offend, okay? Because it is. And I know you're a liar and you're an asshole and you're not a libertarian and you can all go fuck yourselves, you white Confederate pieces of shit. And I do repudiate you because you're not libertarians and I hope you burn in hell. If there is a hell, I hope you all go there and are sitting right alongside this kid when he fries. But I'd like to finish this with my real thoughts on the matter. Why do I think things like this happen? And it is that unsatisfying answer that dwells in the realm of psychology. I'm going to post something. I posted something yesterday, and I want to deconstruct it for a moment and get your thoughts on it. But I said that when psychotic, illogical people do unspeakable things, logical, sane people attempt to rationalize why. Unfortunately, trying to bring order to chaos will more often lead to us pointlessly staring into the abyss. Of that, we must beware. And what I mean is that people who are psychos have brains that don't function like the rest of us. You know, they don't have empathy. Like, you know, if I slapped you right now and you cried and were upset, Laura, I would feel upset and bad because I would feel your pain. I would know that what I did to you was wrong and I would feel sorry that I did it. I might still do it. But
and then you would be crying because I would have slapped you back harder.
Well, exactly. I can feel my own pain, but I can also feel yours.
Sure. Empathy.
Right. Neuroscience, unfortunately, has a lot of work to do for us to be able to know what goes on in the brains of killers, you know? But the problem is that rational, sane, logical people, we're always trying to assign rational, logical understandings to the people who have renounced the sure. use of it. My point there about like look staring into the abyss, this is a quote from Nietzsche, who said that sooner or later that if you stare into the abyss for too long, sooner or later the abyss will stare into you. And you know, it's like when I'm reading too much conspiracy theory stuff so I can debunk conspiracy theories, I feel a little crazy myself. I do. Like sometimes I'm like, ooh, like I start my brain, like when you spend too much time reading crazy, it's like the people who type in all caps about the Zionist Rothschild, you know, Illuminati, reptile conspiracies.
I love people that type in all caps.
Yeah. But I mean, like if you were to read that stuff all day, wouldn't you start to feel a little nuts too?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you, like if you tried to make sense of it, if you tried to think that, oh, these are rational, logical people saying things that I need to try and put together, then your brain would start to cook. And you...
And I would put foil hats on.
Right.
And...
Yes, because... And in some ways, it sort of parallels the story of Medusa, which, you know, the story she had snakes in her hair and stuff like that, and it was a wild, crazy woman. But if you looked into her face, you would turn to stone. And just like in the Bible, when God told Lot and his, you know, wife, don't, and his sons, don't look back at the cities. Mm-hmm. And when she looked back, she turned to salt. Because there are some things too horrific to look into. And what happens is that, like, people like this shooter, he probably went online. He probably went to Reddit/r/Coontown every day and was looking at all these racist forums and was probably reading a lot of racist literature. I'd be very curious to see his bookshelf. That's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see what books he read, not necessarily what drugs he was taking, because the drugs are only going to exacerbate tendencies that you already have. You know,
they're just a catalyst.
Right. Drugs don't make you do things that you aren't sort of inclined to in the first place, for the most part. You know what I mean? You know, if this guy was prone to fits of random violence or outbursts, you know, he probably, you know, drugs was going to exacerbate that. But I'd like to read what laid that layer of hate down in his life and how he acquired those racist beliefs. And you know, I'd like to see, you know, what he was reading. I'd like to see his chat logs, and I'd like to see what his bookmark websites were. But again, ladies and gentlemen, it's not something that you can say, oh, there's going to be a nice little pretty box with a bow on it. This is why this guy did this. And it's unsatisfying, but you're not going to get away with saying blame the guns. You're not going to get away with saying blame the drugs. You can make an argument about racism and white supremacy, and that is something that we do need to harshly criticize and to mitigate in our society. Racism is bullshit. There's only one race, the human race, and we are all members. And my heart goes out, my sympathy goes out to the victims of these crimes, because it is absolutely heartbreaking to lose someone that you love. And I know that there are a lot of people out there that are hurting today. And Laura and I would just like to express our condolences to anyone who might be affected by this tragedy. Please, please reach out to us if you enjoyed the show today. If you have some thoughts, if we said something you didn't like, that's fine. Send us an email, we will look forward to hearing from you. Did you want to finish with anything, Laura?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I did see a post that was very powerful, and it was from one of the a member of the church who was there and witnessed the crime, and I think he was a family member of one of the victims, and he posted a very powerful thing, post on Facebook to the shooter's page, and told him that he forgave him for what he did, and that he was praying for him, and that kind of forgiveness is very powerful and very cool, and I like to see things like that as a response to violence instead of, you know.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to Freedom Report Podcast. If you enjoy our show today, go to iTunes and subscribe to us. If you really enjoy the show, you can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Help us out really, really badly. We really appreciate that. And if you don't have an Apple device, you can download us on Stitcher, Stitcher.com. Go to Stitcher.com, download the Freedom Report Podcast. And as always, don't forget to come back every single day to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at
LibertarianRepublic.com.